But I started studying people who were much less caring than average because that's all that anybody was studying at the time.
Right.
And that's people who were psychopathic and adolescents in particular. And that really is the core deficit in people with psychopathy, is that they don't seem to care about other people's welfare at all. We can learn a lot about the human capacity for care by studying people who have less, who exhibit less than the usual amount of care and certainly report feeling. But it would be even more interesting to study people who seem to show more than the usual amount of care for other people's welfare.
Welcome to the Living Transplant Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of the transplant program at Toronto General Hospital. I'm your host, Candace. Each episode, we share the powerful stories from transplant recipients and living donors, along with insights and education from leading medical professionals. On today's episode, we're going to think about what do anonymous kidney donors and a psychopath have in common? According to today's guests, more than you might think, we're talking to Dr. Abigail Marsh, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Georgetown University, whose research explores both ends of the human empathy spectrum. She studies extraordinary altruists, like anonymous living kidney donors who give a kidney to a total stranger, and also people on the other end, people with psychopathy. Through her work, Dr. Marsh has uncovered fascinating clues about what drives human behavior, from stunning acts of compassion to emotional detachment. Her research focuses on the amygdala, a small but powerful part of the brain involved in fear, emotion, and empathy. And what she's found is reshaping how we understand everything. Please enjoy. Welcome. Thank you so much, Dr. Marsh, for joining us today on the podcast. We are thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we're going to jump right in into these questions because a lot of us have been watching your TED Talks and following your research, and it's absolutely amazing. You've studied both psychopaths and altruistic kidney donors. Those two seem to be quite opposite ends of the spectrum. So I'm wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about what sparked your interest in exploring this spectrum through the lens of the amygdala.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fundamentally, I'm interested in why people care about others. And I do think that what sparked this interest originally was my experience getting rescued by a stranger, not in the form of a kidney donation, but it was the short version of the story, which is out there already, is that I was driving home to Tacoma, Washington from Seattle on the Interstate 5 freeway many years ago when I was about 19. And while I was driving over an overpass, a dog ran out in front of my car. I did the instinctive but wrong thing, which was swerve to try to avoid it, hit it anyways. My car went spinning across the freeway, miraculously didn't hit anybody, but then I got stranded in the fast lane of the freeway on this overpass. And my engine died in the process. So I couldn't save myself. And I couldn't figure out that I needed to put the car back in park to get the engine back on again. Anyways, and then out of nowhere, you know, it was the very late at night. I think it was around midnight. I hear a rap on my window and turn to see a man standing outside of the car. He was on the little tiny edge of this overpass, and my windows rolled down. And he asked, "You look like you could use some help." This wonderfully deep, reassuring voice. And again, the short version of the story is that I later figured out he had run across the freeway to get to me after pulling over in the exit ramp on the other side. And then when I said, "Yeah, I did some help," he ran into the freeway again, got in the driver's seat as I moved over, got the car running again, got us back across the freeway and, into the exit ramp area. And so, you know, I'm very sure he saved my life. It was going to be any minute that one of these semis or cars racing past hit me or us. And, and what was so incredible about it is that, you know, all he wanted to know is that I was going to be okay afterward. He asked me if he could follow me home to make sure I got home okay. He was like, "You don't look so good. Are you going to be all right?" And, you know, I was a mess. I was 19. I was like, I'm okay. Oh. And then he said, "Okay, well, you take care of yourself." And then off he went. And he didn't tell me his name. You know, there was no way for him to receive any credit for what he did. And it was just this very profoundly moving experience to realize that I owed my life to the courage and selflessness of this stranger. And it seemed to violate some, you know, established economic or biological or psychological principles regarding human nature. And so it really stuck in my brain. And so I, you know, and again, everything looks clearer in retrospect than it did at the time, but it's clear looking back how my research interests at that point were moving toward why we are motivated to help other people who need help. And so I did some research in the lab looking at very small forms of altruism, like donating a little money or volunteering a little time to help somebody. But, you know, it's really hard to study altruism in the lab for various reasons, because, you know, like, is donating a dollar to somebody in a little task when they're not really there? And, you know, is that really, and it's not your own dollar, right? It's like, you were going to get paid more and you can get paid a little less. So it's, you know, and I do these things in my own life now. So it's not like they're completely invalid, but they're unsatisfying. And so I moved after that to studying people who had done things in the real world that suggested that they had different capacities to care for others or different tendencies to care than average. But I started studying people who were much less caring than average, because that's all that anybody was studying at the time. And that's people who were psychopathic, and adolescents in particular. And that really is the core deficit in people with psychopathy, is that they don't seem to care about other people's welfare at all. And this includes people who are psychopathic, who actually are very helpful and kind, many of whom I know now and I count as valued colleagues. And I know that sounds paradoxical, like they can't really be psychopathic. And it's like, you know, psychopathy is a personality variable, and people can learn to change their behavior despite their personality. And of course, personality and behavior go together. So the way that you act does change your personality over time. But in any case, So the research I did when I finished my PhD was brain scanning research with adolescents who are psychopathic at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And we conducted some of the first brain imaging studies of psychopathic adolescents that found differences in the way they respond to people's distress in a structure called the amygdala, which it seems to play an important role in representing emotions like fear, both in yourself and in other people. That's not all it does. It's a complicated structure. It has, you know, lots of functions, but that is one thing it does. And so then when I moved to my current position at Georgetown, I came back to thinking, okay, well, we can learn a lot about the human capacity for care by studying people who have less, who exhibit less than the usual amount of care, and certainly report feeling little or no care for other people's welfare. But it would be even more interesting to study people who seem to show more than the usual amount of care for other people's welfare. And so luckily, altruistic kidney donation had just taken off sort of in the popular awareness at that time, which was around 2010. There was that fantastic Larissa McFarquhar, New Yorker article, Strangers Drowning, and a few other really nice sort of public pieces about altruistic kidney donation. And I remember thinking, you know, look, if this isn't altruism, I don't know what it is. And I discovered that there at the time was a bioethicist at Georgetown named Robert Beach, who had done some work with altruistic kidney donation organizations. And it was very fortuitous. And so with his assistance, I was able to start reaching out to altruistic kidney donors to do some psychological and neuroscience studies to try to understand, you know, what makes people who are willing to give a stranger their own kidney tick. And it was one of the luckiest things that's ever happened to me. It's been such a joy and a privilege to do this work for now, I guess, about 15 years.
And so when you went into this research and started looking at these extreme altruists, you discussed that you found the amygdala is smaller in psychopaths and larger in these extreme altruists. Can you talk a little bit about how those differences could translate into their behavior and differences in the way that they act?
Absolutely. And I'll give the big caveat before I start that we are nowhere near understanding exactly what is going on in these structures with the level of precision we would like to, because when we do human neuroscience, we just don't have the tools that, for example, animal researchers use.
Right.
You know, they can implant electrodes in animals' brains that, you know, stimulate them and turn off whole regions. And then, you know, obviously other things that we would never do with human beings. And so while MRI has given us the incredible ability to look inside an intact living human brain, it's very rudimentary in some ways. But I derive a lot of my thinking about the amygdala from the animal literature, which makes it abundantly clear that the amygdala plays an essential role in generating the motivation to help others. There have been some incredible studies in mice just that came out just this year showing that the amygdala plays an essential role in resuscitation of unconscious mice, if you are a mouse. It's this unbelievable study where they demonstrated quite clearly, you know, they turned off the amygdala, they turned on the amygdala, and they showed that it is the region, a particular part of it, that if a mouse encounters a mouse buddy who is out cold, the amygdala is what drives him to try to wake him up again. And they're really quite sweet about it. They, you know, they'll poke around at their little mouse friend's face and feet. And eventually they'll do things like kind of try to pull on their tongue, like really quite aggressively stimulate their mouth region and pull on their tongue. And it does wake them up. Like they're quite successful at it. And the amygdala seems to play a role in initiating that desire and urge to rescue your buddy. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It made me feel quite differently about mice also.
Yes.
So I feel quite confident that the amygdala is playing a central role in altruism in humans as well. What we have found in our studies to date is that the amygdala is a little larger in altruistic kidney donors than in the average person by 8%, which may not sound like a lot, but it's a lot in brain scanning world. Whereas in people who are psychopathic, it's pretty reliably smaller. In any case, but all we have is altruistic kidney donors who are adults. And it is true in our studies thus far that we've found the amygdala tends to be larger, which could mean, and I believe it does mean, that the populations of cells within the amygdala that seem to be responsive to others' distress or need and stimulate the desire to relieve that distress or help are more active. You know, the density of neurons in that region is greater. The receptors for neurotransmitter like oxytocin are denser. It's something like that. We can only speculate based on piecing together what we know about the human and animal literature.
That's fantastic and so interesting. I mean, often we kind of separate ourselves from the animal world and animal kingdom, but, you know, hearing that these tiny little mice have, you know, similar reactions like that, it, like you said, it just changed your thought process on the animal world and how they react to their little buddies and things like that. But it is fascinating.
One of my favorite things about linking what we know about animal behavior and human behavior is that it also, I think, makes it more clear that the capacity to care about others' welfare and the motivation to help is not an evolutionary new thing. It's not, you know, it doesn't result from superhuman powers or, you know, mystical events. It's biological, and humans are built with a capacity to care about others' welfare. And I think that that is helpful because, you know, I'm sure you've encountered, there are people who are very dubious that altruism is even real, that anybody really cares about other people. And I think that's too bad. And I like linking altruistic motivation to basic and very ancient biological processes, because I think it demystifies it a little bit.
Yes. And it does go to that thought process that, you know, humans are naturally evil or we're naturally selfish and that, you know, we're out there for ourselves. It does, like you said, it gives us hope that, you know, human nature is kind and good. And we can see that even in, you know, that layer of our physical body as well. And I think you're right. It does give that hope to us that, maybe we're not all born naturally selfish, and, you know, it kind of challenges that idea.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, if you look at other primate species, some of our closest cousins in the animal world, I mean, we're way more generous than they are. You know, macaques and monkeys like that will never share, will never sacrifice their own welfare to help a buddy. I mean, if the difference is between, pulling a lever that will mean that the pellets just go into an empty room versus go to your buddy, you're more likely to give it to your buddy, right? I mean, you'd rather your buddy benefit than nobody. So monkeys will do that. But if it's the choice between the pellets go to me or the pellets go to you, monkeys will never pick
someone
else, right? Other kinds of monkeys will, but, you know, rhesus monkeys will not. And, you know, for humans, it's considered very normal to want to share in those situations all around the world. And people differ, right? Some people share with others. And it's not that we don't have any self-interest. Everybody does. But the degree to which we also genuinely care about other people's welfare in addition to our own, and how we've really, I think, thanks to all the animal research, done a nice job of understanding how, like, there's specific neurons within the amygdala of primates that encodes the value of what happens to others, and that drives giving behavior. But there's also neurons that encode the value of our own outcomes. And so it's like a little tension. But everybody has the capacity to value others' welfare. It's just our goal is to see, like, how can we just raise that up a little bit? You know, how can we change the relative weight of these two motivations?
And thinking about that, thinking about those wires and the genes of our brain and how things are different between different people, do you think there is a genetic or developmental explanation for why someone is more wired to be more empathetic while other people are lacking that feeling? Is there a reason why some people's amygdala is wired for that empathy?
Probably, partly. There are very few human outcomes that are not affected by genetic variation. In fact, that's one of the first laws of behavioral genetics, is every behavior is affected by genetic variation, at least to some degree. And the question is how much. And some psychological outcomes, like bipolar disorder, for example, are very genetically determined, right? I mean, everybody, you know, and bipolar disorder runs in my family, and there are essentially no people with bipolar disorder don't also have family members with it. So that's a very strongly genetically driven variation. But most sort of personality level psychological outcomes fall right into the same range, which is that about half of the observed variation is due to genetic variation. And then about the other half is due to other stuff. To some degree, things like how people were parented, but not as much as people think.
Right.
There's a lot of idiosyncrasy and sort of unknowns in why some people develop one way and other people develop other ways. And it's a complex stew. But almost, and everybody who's had more than one kid or has even spent time around very young children will tell you that everybody's a little different. You know, even in utero babies, you're different, we can tell.
For sure.
And so, you know, probably, well, and certainly we know, I should also emphasize that being psychopathic has a strong genetic component. You know, probably over half of that variation is due to genetics. But it's so important to not conflate that with genetic determinism, right?
There's
just because genetics influence a phenomenon does not mean that, you know, there's a gene for that thing. And if you have that gene, that's the outcome you have. That's, you know, certainly for most psychological variables, not true. And so, you know, probably for people who are more altruistic, they may start out a little more socially sensitive, a little more emotionally sensitive. They may just naturally be more attuned to other people and how they seem to be feeling. And certainly, I have had the chance to talk to a few people who are the parents of altruistic kidney donors, who say that, yes, there were some observable differences along those lines early on. And people who were the parents of children who develop psychopathy often will say the same, that there was something different about them from the beginning. However, you know, even wherever you start, there's a whole range of outcomes that could develop based on life experiences. And one of the things I have definitely learned about working with people with altruism is that they all report discovering how rewarding altruism was, helping other people was early on. And so it's never that donating a kidney is the first altruistic thing you did. You start off and like nearly 100% of kidney donors I've worked with are also blood donors, for example.
For sure.
Yeah. And so, and that's a really easy first step toward discovering, oh my gosh, you know, this is not that hard. And, you know, now people are alive who wouldn't be alive were it not for my blood. And boy, why not sign up for the marrow registry? Because, you know, that also, that doesn't seem like that big a step. And then I think, you know, when people learn about the opportunity to donate a kidney, if they've had good rewarding experiences donating other things, it sort of feels like a natural next step. So I think the fact that helping other people is rewarding is one of the things that helps people develop the desire to be altruistic as they progress.
Yeah, when I talk to, I mean, it's one of my favorite parts of my job is talking to our living donors and why they've done that and, you know, hearing their stories. And it's fascinating to me that I would say, you know, over 80% of them, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, well, why not? I could, right? Which is, you know, such a simple thing for them to say. And then of course, digging into their story, there's other acts of kindness that they've done throughout their life. And, you know, maybe they grew up in a home with a parent who was in healthcare, or, you know, maybe they had a friend who had a chronic illness throughout their life, or maybe they just, like you said, maybe they walked by a poster one day and it said, donate blood. And they did. And that was an okay experience. And they progressed along that line. But it's amazing to hear about the people who donate an organ to anyone. And then that extra level of donating to a stranger, because often we understand if you see someone like your brother or your best friend in need of something, you want to help that person because you love them and you want to see them be healthy again. But these strangers who will never meet the recipient, who will never know who they were or how they're doing, they just put that kidney or that portion of their liver out into the universe and say, good luck, organ, please, you know, do my recipient well and keep them healthy. It's amazing. And I see the good, of course, because I get to see the recipients on the other side as well. But my colleague and I saw a slide one time from a physician arguing the fact that anonymous donors were not psychopathic. And it was fascinating because, you know, when this program started specifically at UHN, there was a lot of discussions around an ethical board about why would somebody do that? Why would someone donate to a complete stranger? So I guess my question is, how do you respond to people who talk about that extreme altruism, about being pathological or irrational, or maybe, you know, out of their mind to do this to somebody else that they don't know?
Yeah. And I hear that a little less now, but I will say it was extremely common. Mm-hmm. And I still hear it sometimes. I think it comes from a couple places. One, I think for people who themselves would never consider donating an organ to a stranger. And I would say when you poll people, you know, like we've literally done studies where we walk up to people in the street and ask, you know, would you consider donating a kidney to a stranger? Yes, weird question, you know, to ask for a stranger. But, you know, over half will say they'd consider it. And then in response to being told by many donors when I first started this work that the reason that they decided to donate was getting the information that it was necessary, but often then follow up with, okay, well, here's a bunch of information about donation here, you know, risks and benefits, how the need, how many other people are doing it, the types of information that donors often say is important. And then ask them again, okay, now would you consider donating a kidney to a stranger? And it doesn't move the needle that much, just getting the information. I think it's more about whether people think, would I sacrifice to help somebody I didn't know at all? Is kind of, I think, the first place you start. And again, more than half of people would be like, yes, I'd consider it. Now, would all of those people actually do it if push came to shove? No.
Right. They don't. Yes.
In fact, quite a few people, you know, it's a minority of people who initially sign up as a potential altruistic kidney donor will ultimately go on to donate. And many of them are ruled out for medical reasons, but a lot of them end up deciding, like, I actually just can't do this. Sometimes because they're talked out of it by family members, interestingly. Right. But, and you know, everybody knows those stories. And so I think for those third-ish people who themselves would never even consider doing this, I don't care what information you give them. I think when you can't imagine a mind frame, it's easy to just say, well, then they're crazy. people who would never consider donating come from all walks of life, including some transplant professionals. And so oftentimes, you know, they were the first ones to say, these people who are willing to do something that I would never do, I cannot explain it in any other way.
Right.
They're crazy.
Right.
In addition, it doesn't help that there are prominent schools of intellectual scholarship from economics and biology and psychology that state clearly that human nature is all about self-interest, right? Humans are innately selfish. Everything comes down to self-interest, rational self-interest. It's even called sometimes in economics.
Right.
And so by default, if you are doing something that seems to violate that principle, it must be irrational. And then finally, I think there is this thing, it's called do-gooder derogation. This is a phenomenon where people will have kind of a defensive response to people who engage in altruistic behavior that's outside the norm. You know, it's kind of it's basically a reaction to not wanting the norms to change. So yeah. That's a phenomenon. And anybody who read that article in the Times about 5 years ago, The Bad Art Friend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that piece?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was in the
Bad Art Friend.
Yeah. I got a lot of emails from altruistic kidney donors after that article came out because it was an article about short story fiction writers, one of whom used the story of another writer who had donated a kidney to a stranger and portrayed it in a story she wrote as an incredibly sort of selfish, attention-seeking, narcissistic decision. Yeah.
Interesting.
Classic do-gooder derogation.
Yeah.
And it was very upsetting, as you might imagine, to
for
all
sure.
of who read the article and donated kidneys to strangers. And it was one of the very few times I've, you know, written along. It was on Twitter thread at that time, you know, saying, look, I mean, my research does not support the idea that altruistic kidney donation comes from a place of narcissism and attention seeking. In fact, it seems to be the opposite.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'll find the links to a couple of the articles that you've mentioned too, and put them so people can read them. But that's interesting. Yeah. We've had a couple of those questions in our program over the years, exactly that, like thinking, well, it can't be all good. These people can't be all good, right? There has to be a silver lining somewhere I guess not silver, but a dark lining somewhere that they're doing this for some reason. They have to get something good out of it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I said, well, I mean, I've met thousands of them and have yet to meet one of them that was doing this for anything other than just to help the person in need, which is amazing.
There's a strong correspondence between altruism and humility, which initially I thought was this just sort of a strange coincidence, but now I think it's essential. Because if you think that you're a special person, why would you want to help less special people? Because the special person should have the best outcomes. And I think it tends to be incredibly consistent that very altruistic people do not think of themselves as special. Or more important than anybody else. It's not that they're self-deprecating. It's just, I'm not any more special than this person who's dying from kidney disease. So if this person needs a kidney to live and I have an extra, like, I don't even understand why you would ask the question.
Right.
Why I wouldn't make this small sacrifice, if you frame it that way. To save this person's life when they're no less important a person than I am. And I think that's a really pivotal part of the equation.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was doing a panel earlier this week and I had a couple donors and recipients on the panel. And one of them said to the idea that we are superheroes or saints in any way really makes it harder for other people to step up to donate because they think to themselves, well, I'm just a regular person. I can't be a superhero. And so this person was saying, I don't like calling us superheroes. I don't like calling us saints because I woke up one day and this idea popped in my head. And the way that I went about it was finding other people who had done it. I was not the first to do it. There's lots of people out there. And she said, I like to phrase it as, normal people can do extraordinary things. And yes, we might be wired differently and some people might not understand why we do it, but we're just normal people. Like she said, I went back to work and half the people that I work with don't know even know that I did it. And so she said, I like to spread the word, but I like to talk about it as, you know, normal me doing something wonderful. And she said, it was such a gift to myself. And it will continue to be a gift to myself the rest of my life that I did this. And so it's amazing hearing these stories from people who do this, and, you know, how wired they are to just do this out of the goodness of their heart. It's quite amazing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this distinction between what altruistic kidney donors are like, or altruistic organ donors of all kinds, of course. And, you know, to be honest, also marrow donors and heroic rescuers. And there's lots of ways to be altruistic, I always emphasize. But we did a study that was published 2 years ago, where it was a really big personality profile of altruistic kidney donors, liver donors, marrow donors, heroic rescuers, and humanitarian aid workers. And then we also had a separate group of people make predictions about what we'd find. And, you know, you might not be surprised to hear that the people that we polled said, well, the altruists will be better in every way. They'll be more agreeable. They'll be nicer.
Yes.
They'll be more conscientious and self-disciplined and, you know, more open to new ideas. And like, like whatever the good trait is, they'll have that trait.
Yes.
That's not true at all. You know, people
right.
altruistic are every personality under the sun, except that I think they genuinely do care more about other people's welfare. But they're not angels. And I say this, you know, as somebody who has infinite respect
yes.
and admiration for people who
of
donate
course.
Kidney donors. But I've learned that it's just unhelpful to paint altruism as a part of a package of being superhuman in some way. And that the first people who will make that case are people who are themselves altruistic.
Definitely. With our remaining time, I'm wondering, you know, thinking about this incredible research that you've done and how it impacts our thought process on empathy and altruism, is there something that you would want the general public to know about altruism or empathy or even this research outside of what we've talked about?
Well, I think your questions have been excellent. So we've covered, I think, some of the things that I think are the most important, which is that altruists are in many ways just regular people with, you know, all different, you can't tell. I mean, that this is what's so interesting is that we're not that good at detecting who around us is relatively selfish versus selfless. We're not that good at spotting who among us is psychopathic, because we get too led astray by things like attractiveness and charm and confidence. And we're not that good at detecting who around us is altruistic. Because if you assume that to be altruistic, you have to be perfect in every dimension, well, that you're going to miss the actually altruistic people around you. And I think that may be one of the reasons that people get cynical, is because they think, well, look at all these flawed people out there, you know. And I mean, that's sort of the beauty of being humans, is look at all these wonderful things we do despite our flaws, not because we have no flaws. And then the other thing I always try to emphasize, actually, maybe this is the most important point, is that altruism is not particularly rare. Humans are an unusually altruistic species. It's easy to forget that if you allow yourself to be bathed in a steady diet of negativity, thanks to either the news media or social media. They're both the same. They are financially incentivized to show us bad news, because we pay attention to bad news and we look for bad news, because that, you know, has an evolutionary protective basis. However, when you allow that information to flood your brain at much higher rates than it would have, you know, before the age of all the forms of media, you will develop the statistical belief that humans are that bad, because you're like, well, look at the terrible things we do. And it's like, you know, try as best you can to, you know, set that aside and pay attention to the real world of humans out there, who mostly are doing good, kind, helpful, cooperative, generous things all around us every day. And that actually is the norm for humans. And it's not like we don't need to pay attention to the bad stuff and try to reduce it. We do. It's not like we don't need to, you know, look for ways to make people even more pro-social, which we do, and is possible, because actually pro-social behaviors do seem to be increasing over time. There's lots of data at this point to suggest that actually people are getting slightly more pro-social as the years pass. But again, that's never what we're going to read or hear or see in any form of mass media, including social media. So I think, unfortunately, that can make people feel pretty cynical. So I do try to get the facts out there that, you know, most people are actually pretty nice. And they seem to be getting nicer over time. And it doesn't mean there aren't problems, but there's a lot of reason for hope and optimism too.
Well, that is definitely a sentiment that we need to take into our daily life, especially like what you said, everything we read and see out there today, but thinking about the goodness in the world and the little acts of kindness that people do all around us, and focusing more on how people are kind and naturally good. So thank you for bringing that to us, and thank you so much for this incredible research that you're doing, and for the time that you took today. It's a true honor to have you on our podcast. We're really grateful.
Well, I am so grateful to the Living Organ Donation community for their partnership and for the opportunity to learn from them over the years. It's been the true privilege of a lifetime to do this work. So I'm thrilled to be on the podcast.
Amazing. Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Living Transplant Podcast. If you did, please rate, leave us a review, and share with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to Living Transplant wherever you're listening today. If you have any ideas for podcast episodes, please reach out to us at livingorgandonation@uhn.ca. For information about Living Organ Donation, you can visit us at www.livingorgandonation.ca. Special thanks to Bespoke Productions for editing this episode and for production support. I'm your host, Candace Coughlin. Thanks for spending your time with us.